report?
There is no reportable action.
Thank you. So I will call to order the City Council meeting of November 26th and ask Council Member Funk to lead us in a pledge to the flag.
Please rise.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Here.
Councilmember Funk?
Here.
Councilmember Newsom?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tem Barbeau?
Here.
Mayor Moreno?
Here.
All present.
Thank you. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda?
Also moved.
Second.
Thank you. And with that, we will waive the reading in full of all ordinances appearing on this agenda, and the titles of the ordinances will be read aloud by the city clerk at the first reading after the motion and before the city council votes. Motion by Mayor Pro Tem Barbeau, second by Councilmember Fonzie. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Barbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Now we have some really fun stuff to do. And the first one, I want to invite up Charlotte Gibbon. She has a photo donation for the city. These beautiful photos here. I would invite you up now, but you'd kind of be in the way of the meeting. But perhaps afterwards. These are lovely.
Thank you.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Okay, I'm like really nervous.
You're just fine.
Thank you.
Hello, my name is Charlotte Gibbon, and I've been a resident of Atascadero for 15 years and a resident of the county for 48. With me here tonight, you just walked in.
Barely.
Thank you. Is San Luis Sheriff Cold Case Detective Clint Cole. Madam Mayor and City Council members, it brings me much joy to be here tonight on this Thanksgiving week to be able to present these three pictures and give them as gifts to say thank you to you for your guidance and support and the abundance of amazing resources this city has to offer and has offered me in helping to give two murdered Atascadero women, Jane Morton Antunes and Patricia Irene Dreyer, a voice. And in this building is where it all began. Please let me explain. On November 26, 1977, 42 years ago today, as a small child, I was made aware of a murder of a local Atascadero woman that took place just off Santa Barbara Road. As I grew older and became an adult, I realized that her murder had not been solved. And the question that came to my mind was, why? So I decided to give her a voice. On August 22nd, 2016, I walked into the city hall and met city receptionist Judy Schaefer. She was extremely kind and generous as she listened to my story, showing the most heartfelt compassion. Judy wrote down on a piece of paper, one, the Atascadero Police Department, two, the Atascadero Library, and three, the Atascadero Historic Society. And to find a gentleman by the name of Lon Allen, and he would probably be able to help me. Judy may not have had all the answers to my questions, but she sure knew where to find them, encouraged me on my path. First, I want to say thank you to the Atascadero Police Department. Thank you so much for always, for all your endless help and guidance in showing me how to get to the Sheriff's Department to be able to report my information. You made me feel supported. Our second amazing resource we have in our city is the Atascadero Library. This is where I met Brian Coburn, retired librarian, and regional librarian Jackie Kinsey. They were amazing at showing me how to use the archive microfiche that you guys have of the Atascadero News located in the city library here. Jackie even went out of her way many times to go make copies for me in San Luis Obispo when the copiers were down here in Atascadero as well. Third, and probably one of the most hidden treasures that we have in our community that was on her list to do, was the Atascadero Historic Society. Thank you so much for access to all of your archive newspapers from 1977 and 1978, as well as high school yearbooks from 1964 to 1968, and for introducing me to Mr. Lon Allen. He was so important in his firsthand account stories of January 11, 1978. Mr. Allen was your editor and reporter for the murder of Patricia Dwyer. In addition, I'd also like to thank Brad Humphrey, who was your reporter for the murder of Jane Antonez. He also did a fabulous job reporting this crime. And to the Atascadero Kiwanis Group, who had placed an anonymous tip line in the 1977-78 news press for any and all information regarding Jane and Patricia's murder. Today, the Atascadero Kiwanis still show compassion, guiding and supporting me. And this spring, we are going to set a memorial bench for Jane and Patricia near the lake. One of the most special resources here, too, and I want to say thank you, is to the people of Atascadero that came forward and sent private messages regarding this case to me. Of course, I faced times of deception, discouragement, doubt, fear, but I managed to pass them all because I always felt like my city supported me. On June 2016, I met with Detective Cole. He sat with me for 2.5 hours and reviewed all the information that I had collected. Even though it did not lead to an arrest, it did, however, bring a cold case active again and did help eliminate a few suspects in the beginning. The morning of the press conference. On April 17, 2019, our Sheriff Ian Parkinson announced that Jane and Patricia's murders had been solved. From the excellent collection and preservation of DNA from the original detectives from 1977 and 78, the hard work of Detective Clint Cole and Detective Jeff Robichotti, and their endless hours of dedication to solving this case, which led them to find DNA on a razor blade that sat in a medicine cabinet in Fresno, California, all pointed to one person with a history of horrific crimes, Arthur Rudy Martinez. And within 72 hours of the press conference, the Associated Press had named Jane and Patricia's voices worldwide. So now I present to you. Thank you. This is better. This is where I started, the City Hall. This is the path we took, all of us together. And this is the morning of the press conference, Rocky Canyon Sunrise in East Atascadero. When Hunting Trilogy, it's titled Working Together. In closing, Elizabeth Morton, sister of Jane, asked that I please mention the family's deep appreciation for the amazing team who helped me. This is truly an amazing story. Sending love and light, Elizabeth.
I have to say, may I call you Charlotte?
Yes.
I had no idea what you were coming to present other than photos tonight, and I am deeply touched, and I thank you so much for sharing that with us. And I think when you said working together, that you're calling this working together, that really is, you know, what you've described and what we really do here. And so thank you to you for what you've done, and certainly to law enforcement, to everybody that's helped. Thank you so very much. I think if you don't mind, it would be nice to maybe greet you and take a picture with working together. Would that be okay with you?
That would be great. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks. Wow. That was pretty amazing. Not every day we get to do something like that. Thank you. All right, and now there's even more good stuff, if you can imagine. So first we have a proclamation recognizing Mr. Don Clickard as the California Parks and Rec Society Champion of the Community Statewide Award recipient. I was going to arm wrestle Councilmember Newsom, like, because the two greyhounds, like, who gets to give this? And I gave it to her because I figured she'd beat me in an arm wrestle. But I also want to let you know that Don was recently selected as the California School Boards of Association Trustee of the Year for 2019. And I think those of us that know Don are not at all surprised and so proud to have him in our community. And with that, I'll turn it over to Councilmember Newsom.
She thinks I'm tough, but I was a softie. I did have tears in my eyes in this last presentation. So, Don, I'll try not to shed some tears. You've seen many. I'm very honored to be reading this today about you. Whereas California Park and Recreation Society's CPRS District 8 has selected Don Clickard of Atascadero as a recipient of their 2019 Champion of the Community Award. And whereas this award recognizes Don Clickard's significant contributions and efforts to influence and improve the quality of our community, as well as his deep sense of community pride, spirit, and volunteerism. And whereas the CPRS award recognizes Don Clickard's many years of service and unwavering dedication to the youth of our community. And whereas Don Clickard serves as the executive director of the Greyhound Foundation, which works to fund facilities and programs at Atascadero High School, and on the foundation's Lighthouse Committee, which is dedicated to reducing drug and alcohol abuse by the youth in our community through awareness, prevention, intervention, and education. And whereas Don Clickard provides guidance and assistance for numerous local events and community groups, including Hares and Hounds, all-comers track meets, the Atascadero Chamber of Commerce, and as a long-term school board member, to name just a few. And whereas the city of Atascadero is extremely proud to have Don Clickard selected by CPRS District 8 in recognition of his lifetime of service to Atascadero and to the youth of our community. Now, therefore, on behalf of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, we take great pleasure in hereby commending Don Clickard for his outstanding community involvement, his spirit of volunteerism, and for conditionally doing his utmost to improve the lives of Atascadero's youth, as well as for his many other accolades and achievements. I'm very honored. Thank you, Don Clickard.
We are going to have you come to the podium and say a few words. We are going to have you
speak.
Oh. He thought he could shake our hands and get out of saying something, but that's not going to happen.
So there is a saying that we use in Ground Foundation and our Lighthouse program, and it's we, not me. It's something we've talked about a long time in our organizations, and I've always felt like, okay, that's true of kind of where I've been through the high school and being athletic director and teaching special ed and doing other things. But, you know, if you just think about where we are tonight, Roberta said it with a God's wink, because when I was at Cal Poly doing my master's work in physical education, they asked us where we wanted to do our student teaching, and I wrote down San Luis Junior High School. And so when Sheldon Hardin who was the professor in charge of these things, said to me, said, reading the list, he said, Clickard, Atascadero High School. And I said, wait, remember San Luis Junior High? And he said, no, the married guys get to stay in town. You guys, single guys, get to travel. Where the logic in that was, I don't know. But anyway, so that spring, I was working for the county of San Luis Obispo while I was going to school, driving a school bus, a little school bus thing. And they asked me if I wanted to take a week-long job to transport the kids to a pilot program for a speech and hearing thing that was going to start that summer. That speech and hearing thing became Camp Happy Talk. And Dorian Depler-Smith, Dorian Smith in those days, was in charge of that program. And I had a degree in physical education prior to the prior to my teaching thing. And so I was hanging out there as the bus driver, but then she said, well, you know a little bit about this stuff, so why don't you help us? So I became that first activities director, and I did that for 4 years at Camp Happy Talk. So We Not Me started right then. One of the tigers at Camp Happy Talk, there were tigers and campers, and the campers were the kids with speech and hearing disabilities. Roberta Fonzi was one of those original tigers in that very first year, and that's kind of where it started. And if I look around this room, when I got my teaching job, Lon Allen and I were teachers together at Atascadero High School, and he got his dream job being the editor of the newspaper, so he left, it was a big loss for us because he, as you know, was good and is good. I also was a class advisor to the class of 1973. Brad Humphrey's name was mentioned tonight. He was in that class. Rick Evans was in that class. And I think Rick was in the class I student taught with the group of four who used to carry Ed Biagini up the stairs in his wheelchair back in the day before we worried about handicapped appliance.
ADA accessibility.
Thank you. So we used to carry, they carried Ed up the stairs. And so those guys, they had to carry him back down. And so if class ended at 9 o'clock, about 3 minutes to 9, they said, well, it's time for us to take Ed down. I said, okay, take Ed down. And then a couple of days later, it was like 5 minutes to, we got to take Ed down. And then it was 10 minutes to, we got to take Ed down. And then it was quarter to. And at one of their reunions not too long ago, they were kind of laughing at me about that, how they really pulled one on me with that. And I said, you know what, you guys think about that for a minute. I was rid of you for 5 minutes, then 10 minutes. Anyway, so the we, not me thing works in so many ways. Casey Bryson in our class, Heather on our board, so many of you that make this a very unique community. Chief Haley, I heard a comment a few weeks ago. We were talking about our Lighthouse program and whether it might be able to be a program in San Luis Obispo because it's doing great things here. Our mentors and everybody, and our police department, our fire department, our first responders are just amazing in what we do and what we've been able to accomplish so far. And somebody whose name I won't mention because he wouldn't probably be real popular in San Luis with the position that he holds to say, I don't know that we can do the program like Lighthouse in San Luis because we don't have the community that you have in Atascadero. And I, you know, I think of my neighbor Kevin who runs that skate park and how the skaters used to be our nemesis at school and on bleachers and everywhere, and now they are, for the most part, great citizens, thanks to you, Kevin. And so many things. When we just go around this room, people I know, how many times Dick on KPRL sound off doing stuff that we needed to talk about. And so to get an award like this, which is just, it's humbling, incredibly satisfying, but humbling. But we take with that the fact that we're all doing this together, and we're doing a pretty darn good job. Somebody complained once about the freeway going through the middle of town because it kind of died. And maybe it was Lana, said, okay, it's going through the middle of town, so get over it. Let's go. We got work to do, right? And that's the truth. And y'all are doing a great job. I love living here. It was an accident. It was a God's wink. I bet that's a better term, huh, Roberta? So, and thank you for this recognition, and know that it does include so many people who have made us all just this is a pretty special place. So thank you very much.
Yeah, I'm going to ask that if you stay here, and then we're going to do our next one, and then we'll come out and do those pictures together. So this working together theme that Ms. Gibbons started us off with is continuing. So we have a second proclamation, and that is recognizing Parents for Joy, also a CPRS Excellence in Design and Park Planning Award recipient. Both Councilmember Fonzie and I were initially on council when Parents for Joy came to Community Forum and told us about the challenge of having children with special needs and not having a place for them to play, not having a park where they could go to. And the five of us at the time sitting up here had no idea, you know, until they brought that to us. And from that point on, moving forward and finding that spot and staff working with Parents for Joy, and that really shows you how citizens wanting to get something done, coming together in a community, whether it was Kiwanis, Rotary, I mean, so many of you just coming around this group, the Oslins, so many that have really made this possible. This was truly community, city, all of us working together. So we're so proud of them. And I would love for Councilmember Fonzie to read the commendation.
Thank you. First, I'd like to urge you, if you haven't seen the Parents for Joy playground, please go and take a look. It's truly unique and something we should be very proud of. Let me go ahead with the commendation. Whereas the California Parks and Recreation Society's District 8 has selected the Parents for Joy Atascadero Joy Playground Project for the 2019 Excellence in Design Park Planning Award, and whereas Parents for Joy is a group of concerned and involved local parents, families, and teachers who live with or are associated with children with special needs, and whereas Parents for Joy had a dream of building a playground that would enhance the safety and involvement of children with special needs such as autism spectrum disorders, sensory processing disorders, Down syndrome, cerebral palsy, visual impairment, and more. Whereas the dream and goal of Parents for Joy was to have a place for children of all abilities to play together, raising awareness and building friendships, as well as to provide the ability for adult parents, grandparents, and other adult loved ones with special needs to have access to their children while at play. And whereas the unique, newly completed, and wonderfully utilized Joy Playground in Atascadero now fosters play and development for children of all abilities while promoting participation, health, and wellness. Now, therefore, on behalf of the City Council of the City of Atascadero, we take great pride and pleasure in hereby commending Parents for Joy on their dedication and involvement for the development and completion of the Joy Playground and on receiving the CPRS District 8 2019 Excellence in Design Park Planning Award. Congratulations.
So we have a little update to let you know about on the playground. But before we do that, Don, you're absolutely right. This community is a we community. And we do a lot of things in the community for the good of the community. So just a couple quick things. We are hoping to install the permanent fence on December 7th, if the materials get here on time. We are announcing tonight, so this is going to blindside you guys on council, but we are definitely blindsiding you by telling you that we are looking at phase two of the Joy Playground, and we are exploring the nice little splash pad option, which is the land adjacent to it, which has already been designated for a splash pad. So we're announcing that's the next campaign for funding, and we're going to try and get it done. Thank you.
Very exciting. I don't know if Sarah or anyone else wants to come forward. Not necessary, but okay. Then we're going to come around, and we would love to take some photos with all of you. So meet us out front. Don, Parents for Joy, all of you. Anybody who wants to be in the picture. Actually, Terry will tell you whether... No. That is certainly some of the best business that we conduct here. So we are now on to our consent calendar. And the consent calendar contains items that are considered routine and non-controversial and can be passed with one motion unless there's a member of the council or the public who's wishing to pull an item. So I will ask if there are any members of the council wishing to pull an item. Seeing none, any members of the public? Seeing none, I will ask for a motion.
Move approval.
I'll second.
We have a motion by Councilmember Funk, a second by Councilmember Newsom. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Burbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We're on to updates from our city manager.
Thank you, Mayor and council members. Want to give a quick recap of all of the events from last week. First, we had the Holiday Boutique at Pavilion on the Lake. We had lots of local shoppers get a head start on their holiday shopping last Saturday at the Pavilion. It was a gorgeous day, and the event was extremely well attended. So the vendors were quite pleased with the turnout. The shoppers were quite pleased with the items. It turned out to be a great way to kick off the holidays. We also had another terrific event that day, and that was Taco Day on Traffic Way. You can see some of the pictures there. We had over 1,000 people come out for Taco Day on Traffic Way. They enjoyed the terrific food and the music and just another gorgeous day here in Atascadero. And then we finished up the night with Groove at the Zoo. Groove at the Zoo was a success and was really a lot of fun, with about 100 people attending to enjoy the evening and supporting our zoo veterinarian, Dr. Steve Robinson, in his 2020 Dancing with Our Stars fundraising event. He is raising funds for the Friends of the Charles Paddock Zoo, which is a critical component in keeping our zoo up and running, and pays for a lot of the exhibit improvements and other things there. So it turned out that Dr. Steve has quite a few moves. Very good dancer. It was a lot of fun. And I want to thank everybody that attended that fundraiser. They're going to continue to keep raising funds through the Dancing with Our Stars event. And please come support one of the dancers. They all support fantastic charities. We even have a dancer that we know right here.
I was about to say.
That's it. Chief Haley is dancing for the Canine Foundation. We'd love to have you support him, too. Upcoming holiday events. Okay, this is a busy time of year. So it starts off on Friday, December 6th, from 5:30 to 8:30 p.m. here at City Hall in the Sunken Gardens. We have our traditional countdown to light up City Hall. Plus, there'll be lots of great music, hay rides, Model A fire trucks, and, of course, Santa will be here for all of the kids. Then we have the musical Holiday Walk Around the Lake at Atascadero Lake on December 7th from 5:30 to 9:30 p.m. Again, that has lots of music, carolers, refreshment, beautiful decorations on the home surrounding the lake, free entry to the zoo, and Santa is at the zoo, too. So Santa's going to be busy that week. Then after that, we have Winter Wonderland on December 13th. From 5 to 9 here in the downtown. We'll have a lot of snow, fun activities, vendors. It's a great night all the way around. And then we wrap up our holiday season with Holiday Magic at the Charles Paddock Zoo on Saturday, December 21st, from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. And that's where we give all of our animals, they get Christmas gifts, and we enjoy watching them open them and get some special surprises. So it's a lot of fun that day, too. I do want to have Chief Haley give a brief update on some of the issues we've been having here in the downtown, what steps we've taken, and what's going on there. So, Chief Haley.
Yeah, we just wanted to give Council an update on some of the actions that we're taking proactively to deal with some of the problems we've been having in our Centennial Plaza and the Atascadero Creek Walkway areas. As you know, we've had a number of complaints from business owners, residents, especially parents who are bringing their kids back and forth to school in that area with some of the issues we've been having. One of the things that is most concerning is that this area should kind of, I've called it the, should be a kind of a crown jewel, even though I think City Hall maybe is the crown jewel and this is a lesser jewel, but it was just a few months ago that we actually had that grand opening of our Centennial Bridge and that walkway area, and so we want it to stay nice and be reflective of Atascadero and what Atascadero truly is. We had two groups that we were primarily dealing with, a group of transient individuals and a group of juveniles who were causing most of the problems that appears, things like littering and vandalism all the way up to kind of open-air drug use. And so we've committed a number of resources to kind of working against that. We have officers that are there on an overtime basis during some of those peak periods now. We've authorized our code enforcement officer and our community services officer to both spend extra time there as well to aid in that enforcement. And then just ramping up the patrols that we do up to and including the chief himself out there running around when he probably should be behind a desk, issuing citations and taking enforcement action. We have a number of parent groups that we're working with right now. I think that's key and vital. And then locally, the Kiwanis have also stepped up and said they want to take an active role in what happens down there. And so we're working with them to kind of establish a presence in that area during some of those peak times. I think it can help just to have a set of eyes out there helping to alert law enforcement if something illegal is happening. To give us even more eyes, we're working to establish some cameras in that area that will provide our officers with an additional tool, either to look in on the camera and see what's happening there at any given time, or to go back and review the archival footage if a crime has occurred, be able to readily and rapidly identify the suspects responsible for that. And then we're engaging other partnerships, most notably last week and the week before. We had a number of probation officers come down and assist us, and we're easily able to identify a number of people who they have on their caseloads who shouldn't be there in the first place. And if you're causing problems while you're wearing an ankle monitor, we can probably do something about that. And so we've been able to take enforcement action against a number of people down there. One of the biggest things, though, I think, has been the fact that the Public Works Department came down with an army of people and cleared out a lot of the underbrush and overgrowth. How does that work? Underbrush and overgrowth from that area really gave us some better visibility in the area, kept people from being able to go behind areas and hide. And they do an amazing job of coming through and cleaning up when we request them. It's still an ongoing work in progress, a lot of work to be done. And we're talking about other things that we're going to proactively do to try and keep people from congregating in that area who have ill intent. It's better than it was, still not where we want it to be, so we're still working towards the ultimate goal. And I'm happy to answer any questions about it if you have them.
Chief, is there anyone, if there's anyone out there who wants to help who isn't already involved, how should they reach out?
Certainly, you know, you can always work with Kiwanis. I don't think they would be shy to ask for your help in joining their ranks. But I can put people in touch who want to help with the right parent group. We have an individual, Mark Capozzoli, spoke before council at our last meeting and is very active down there and trying to put together some of those parent groups. So if you just contact me, either at the police department or at my email, jhaley@atascadero.org, I'll be happy to help put people together with the right individuals and make sure that they know where they can lend a hand.
Thank you. And many thanks to your department and, as you stated, to Public Works and to all of you in the public who are helping the parent groups, Kiwanians. It really is everybody working together. And some of the feedback I've been getting is people are noticing an improvement. And as the chief said, there's still more to be done. But thank you so much. And let's keep that continued work together. Do we have any questions of the city manager or the chief?
I do, actually. It might be a question for Mr. DeBar as our Public Works Director. And I see you put out a little message related to the first storm coming, but I'm wondering, is there anything we need to tell the public regarding the first storm, regarding clogged storm drains, or, you know, you sent out something about downed limbs and everything, but is there anything we need to advise the public since we're having our first storm coming up here?
Sure. In years past at this time, Public Works has been working for the last month, going through clearing drains, clearing ditches and other things, making sure pipes are ready for the storms. But with all the debris that falls with the coastline oaks and other trimmings throughout the summer, usually the first, what I call the initial flush storms, the heavier rain events, there usually is some flooding of some sort just because the leaves get displaced from people's front yards or whatever, end up in the catch basin. So if anybody sees any of those, they can call dispatch after hours, or they can call the Public Works Maintenance Department during business hours at 805 470-3148 and just report that, and we'll get out there as soon as we can. But mostly folks, what they can do on their private property is just make sure leaves and twigs and branches and those other things that could get displaced into the storm runoff, they can take care of that and put it in a green waste container, and that'll help us out a lot.
All right. Thank you.
All right. We are on to community forum. This is the part on our agenda where you and the public are invited to come speak to us about anything that is not on the agenda tonight but over which we have jurisdiction. Speakers will be limited to 3 minutes, and the total amount of time will be limited to 30 minutes. If you would like to say something, go ahead and come forward, state your name for the record, and know that anything discussed tonight at community forum, or actually I should say brought up tonight at community forum, really cannot be discussed. We can do a little bit of triage, but we can't have it as a topic of conversation. And with that, welcome to our first speaker.
Good evening, staff and council. I'm Kevin Campion. I am a business owner here in town and work with the city as a partner at A-Town Park. And I wanted to start out by mentioning that Parents for Joy, the facility, I'm excited to hear is hopefully evolving. That's amazing news. But meanwhile, I'm in the circle of communication about the immediate needs for Parent for Joy Park, and that has to do with just day-to-day light maintenance and monitoring of the facility, unlocking the gate in the morning, locking it at night. And I'm just reaching out to the public to consider if it's something within bandwidth to possibly get involved and help us continue to make that facility to its potential, which is incredible. I'm really proud of it. On A-Town Park, which is just across the softball fields, we have experienced recently some of the same issues that the city has been contending with downtown, as far as when the business is closed, the park is closed, people using the parking lot for somewhat nefarious activities. I don't want to go into detail. But also things like vandalism, graffiti. Our neighbor got broken into not too long ago. So with cooperation with city staff, we have done a tremendous amount of maintenance recently on the facility, removing a lot of brush, a lot of undergrowth and overgrowth, however you put it. And it's had an amazing impact in that APD can drive by now and have a clear visual all the way to the back of the parking lot. So that's a big difference, and we're going to continue on that. And then a little bit more on A-Town Park. We met with staff just this week, and we've got some coordinated efforts going into spring 2020 as far as some maintenance projects and so forth that we'll keep council up to date on. And finally, we've been really busy. It's a growing resource for our community for sure, especially for that 8 to 14, 15-year-old. And that we're staffed and we're rather rigid about discipline, we tend to see some of the older teenagers gravitate away from the structure of the park, but the 6 to 12-year-olds especially, it's we've seen dramatic growth. So it's pretty exciting, and I really just wanted to say thank you to council and staff for the ongoing partnership. I'm going on 12 years. I just signed my third year contract to partner with you guys, and I am getting old, but I'm having a blast. You know, it's Fountain of Youth, and I feel blessed. So thank you very much.
Thank you. Anyone else wishing to speak at community forum? Well, seeing none, I will go ahead and close it and bring it back to council. Thank you for that report, Mr. Campion. City manager does try to keep us abreast of what's going on. I didn't know about the overgrowth and underbrush. would be the term you were looking for, removal. So that's great that we're all doing what we can. And you're right, that is the park is such a good resource for our youth, for this community. So thank you for what you do, and I'm glad that we're continuing to work well together. And congratulations on 12 years. Yeah, that's big. All right. Now, so community forum is officially closed, and anyone who did not get a chance to speak and wishes to contact the city clerk, you can do that during business hours, 805-470-3400, Monday through Friday. We have no public hearings tonight, and we have one management report, which is the council adoption of a policy on drive-through businesses and fuel stations and other high-traffic producing uses. And this will be our community development director, Mr. Dunsmore.
Good evening, Mayor and Council, and thank you. It was September 24th, actually, that City Council gave us some direction to come back with a policy that addresses not only drive-through restaurants, but really any land use that has significant traffic impacts to the city. And so what we have tonight is some discussion for you to share with you some of the issues associated with these high traffic intensive uses and some of the solutions that we can come up with in a policy rather than going forward with a full code amendment. So right now we do have a municipal code that really addresses these topics. Essentially, it requires use permits for drive-through uses such as drive-through restaurants, drive-through banks, drive-through coffee shops, things like that. Additionally, the fuel stations in most circumstances also require this conditional use permit review. But aside of that, we don't have a definitive policy that speaks to how we should process these. Should we look at these differently than other land uses such as an office or a house in terms of how they impact the community for traffic? So tonight, we do want to address this draft policy, but also want to just share with you some basic statistics and comparisons about vehicle trips, what that really means. The average drive-through restaurant or average drive-through coffee shop can actually produce as much as 2,000 vehicle trips a day, average probably being about 1,500. Compare that to a quality sit-down restaurant where you're generally spending more time and you're sitting down and you're, you know, with family or friends. Those can average about, you know, 1 to 200 daily trips. Quite a big difference. And then the fuel station. That's the big one, especially when you combine a fuel station with a convenience store, or you combine a fuel station with a car wash, you combine a fuel station with a small restaurant, then you're really getting up there, you know, about 2,500 vehicle trips a day and with peaks in demand throughout the day. So when you look at gas stations, look at these some other uses, they really are the true generators of a lot of local traffic. Compare that to other big users on a property. Let's say, for example, a 120-room hotel, which is a big thing on a property. It takes up a lot of land, several acres of land. That still would only produce about, or, you know, have a demand of about 1,000 trips a day. This one's particularly interesting. Look at about 193,000, or roughly 200,000 square foot of business park, which you could fit on a, you know, let's say, for example, a 10 or 12 acre lot. Huge site. About 2,000 daily trips, which is less than your typical fuel station with a convenience store. So think of a little tiny gas station on about a quarter acre lot compared to a 10 acre site developed with business park and jobs and other high quality items. Almost a similar traffic demand. And again, the last one there, looking at houses. I mean, even 100 homes would equate to about 944 vehicle trips a day. And that's 100 houses. That's a lot of houses. So really what we're getting at is wanting to fulfill what we anticipate in our general plan to see these critical remaining properties develop as we anticipate them to develop without putting an overdue burden on our circulation system and causing us to do traffic improvements that are beyond the scope of what we can afford to pay for our community, what we can actually accommodate. A couple things that I want to touch on, of course, the findings of a typical conditional use permit. That is part of the focus of the policy that we're suggesting tonight, is to really take a close look at those findings. And those findings include general plan compatibility, and primarily also that we're not putting something in place that is going to limit the foreseeable development of that area. In other words, it's going to inhibit what we can see it build out. The other is it's not going to produce a significant amount of traffic that's going to impact our local road system. And that it's not going to stop us from building out that area consistent with the general plan and having a successful, high-quality community. That's really the focus of this policy. What land uses are we looking at in this policy? Not just gas stations, but anything that's traffic-intensive. The drive-through coffee shop, the drive-through restaurant, even the car wash. These are all land uses that have much higher than average traffic implications, traffic impacts. So what does this policy do? It really tries to ensure that we have an adequate review of long-term traffic, a strategy that really focuses on San Anselmo and Del Rio, because those are the two areas that still have the development potential, but you know are anticipated to reach less than satisfactory levels of service when the city is built out in terms of traffic volume. But we're also suggesting utilizing a traffic impact fee ratio throughout the entire city for these land uses. And I'll get to that in just a little bit. But what this does, it reserves our traffic volume and our capacity in our roads for development that we already anticipate in the city or in our specific plan areas and other areas. It really basically just tries to ensure that our general plan can be accomplished, that we can get to build out, and that we can have capacity when we amend our general plan. The map that we have on the screen here is the real area of focus that we'd like to address, and that is the area that feeds into the San Anselmo overpass at Highway 101 in El Camino Real and the Del Rio overpass at El Camino Real and Highway 101. And essentially what we've mapped out here is the commercial zones that essentially supply traffic to those very important commercial nodes in the city. And that this is the special focus area that we're suggesting that we implement this special review by really intensely looking at the findings and really noting that anything that goes in this particular zone that is very traffic intensive is going to need a careful look. We need to carefully analyze it for its compatibility with the general plan, its potential for limiting future growth, and that we adequately collect the traffic impact fees that it is basically based on its impact that it's created in the city. It's a fairly done method. But we also want to look at that same traffic impact fee method citywide for these uses. A lot of small words up on that. I'm not going to read it, but I have the policy language on the screen should we want to go through and talk about that in a moment when I'm done talking about the basics. We can come back to that. And it's also attached in your staff report. So here's the big one. This is the big discussion, the alternative cost per single trip method. That is already in our impact fee calculations available at our hands today for us to utilize. As a standard, we haven't utilized it. We haven't found it necessary. But now, as growth is coming, as we're seeing all this new development, we have to take a look at this alternative. We have to take a look at these options so that we can moderately evaluate and address our traffic impacts. And the suggestion is to look at these citywide for really heavy, intensive land uses. And instead of basing these land uses on their building size, they'd be based on their vehicle trips. So in other words, you know, right now, today, a 2,000 square foot office building, you know, with a number of employees, it has relatively a handful of vehicle trips, is getting charged, you know, probably the same rate as a 2,000 square foot drive-through coffee shop. Now, our traffic impact fees do have some different calculations for different land uses, commercial and residential and different types of commercial. But they don't really separate out the very intensive traffic uses. Now, on the other hand, you know, back to that business park scenario that I gave you earlier, if we look at a 200,000 square foot business park, you know, certainly they're going to have some traffic impacts. They're a big land use. But so will a gas station with a convenience store. They have a similar amount of vehicle trips. They should be paying a similar amount of traffic impact fees to each other if they're going to produce that same amount of trips. But if you use the standard method, the balance is way off, and it's not really fairly calculated for these traffic-intensive uses. So essentially what that will do, and I'm going to go ahead and open this up to questions, but it will, if we utilize that method citywide for these traffic-intensive uses, for the gas stations and drive-thrus, it will be a substantial increase in the traffic impact fees for these land uses.
Phil, do you want to put up, do you have sort of the three, because what we're talking about tonight is the basically a two-page policy in here is really what we're going over.
And this is the second page. The very first page is the sort of overview of the policy and the direction and why we came up with it. And this is really the meat of it, though, right here. This is the...
Yeah, so if you could keep that up. And just to let the public know how this came about, Councilmember Fonzie a few months ago brought up during her individual determination that we might want to look at the increased interest in drive-thrus that is happening in Atascadero with the concern that we might be letting a lot of valuable commercial space go to a drive-through rather than maybe the type of placemaking, sit-down type of space we'd like to be attracting. And so we had that conversation about doing possibly a moratorium, a temporary moratorium on drive-thrus until we go through the general plan and get a better handle on this. We would have needed a 4-1 majority to do that, and we weren't going in that direction. And so what we ultimately all decided is that we would like to do some sort of a policy because particularly, as the director has said, around the San Anselmo and Del Rio area, if we start approving drive-through service stations, drive-through restaurants, it could trigger some significant improvements at Del Rio. And so, Director, I would like to ask you something because in this policy language, I think what we all talked about that night, the big, you know, the elephant, if we will, are the roundabouts, you know, 12 million, 14 million, however many, you know, eight figures that's going to be. And I don't see anything in here. My concern is that in number three, there's nothing in there that really addresses that because Del Rio roundabouts are already in the specific plan. And so you could presumably have an applicant who is very hard-hitting and interested in getting his or her project through and says, well, look, it's already in your specific plan. This policy doesn't meet that. And have somebody push enough and we could end up in a position where we're approving the very thing that we're trying to not do with this policy. So that is the one thing within here that I'm very concerned about. Could you address that?
Let me try and address that. So in a specific plan, there are two big vacant properties right now. There's the Walmart site, we call it, and we call the other one the Annex site, which is on the northeast corner. Both of those are designated for retail uses. The specific plan originally outlined them for large retail uses that were very traffic intensive. It also assumed restaurant pads and accessory uses such as the drive-thrus. This policy can still overlap that and cause us to look at those drive-thrus and gas stations. But what it doesn't do is limit the large retail uses. So those still could go in, which could still trigger the roundabout scenario if both those properties were to develop with large retail uses that had that intensive traffic demand. So it doesn't address that. It wasn't really intended to address that issue. But what we are planning to do is come back with an amendment to the Del Rio specific plan that assumes a different set of land uses that are less large retail, more business park, and a variety of other uses that does alleviate us potentially from that roundabout scenario, at least in the near term. When I mean near term, in the next 10 to 20 years. So that scenario can be followed, but this is a little bit off to the side of it. It certainly helps because if we pull out some of these high-intensity uses at the San Anselmo and Del Rio areas, it definitely gets us a large percentage of the way there, and it's very similar to some of the land use scenarios that we're assuming when we come back with this amendment to the Del Rio specific plan.
So if you were to give us a conservative estimate of when we'll be looking at that specific plan again, and I mean a conservative estimate because I know you're very optimistic, which I love about you,
but we'll be back
realistically, we're going to have a special meeting. I mean, are we talking 6 months out, 3 months out, a year out? What do you see?
I sure hope it's not more than 2 months away, to be honest with you, because we have gotten the analysis back from the traffic consultant. We had some minor tweaks that we had to send back to him. We're waiting for the other piece to come back. We'd like to get with you in the next, within the next 3 months, to be honest with you.
So you're probably thinking February, March-ish, something
like that.
That's right. Okay. So maybe I would ask the city attorney then, if in that time frame someone came in wanting to do a drive-through and we're pointing to this policy and they're saying, well, but you're already planning for a roundabout. This doesn't really address that. This doesn't tell me I can't do my drive-through because I'm not generating a volume of traffic beyond what's going to be expected. Do we have an argument to say, like, no, the intent of the policy is that we don't want to do that?
Well, my understanding is that you already have your conditions that are required, or your findings that are required for your conditions of approval, and that this policy is merely intended to provide some guidance in regards to those findings. So you still have your code that you can rely upon, and whether you could make those findings would depend upon the code without having the guidelines of the policy, but you still have the code.
Okay, which we all agreed didn't necessarily take care of the issue anyway. I think I tend to be more in the, you know, a little bit skittish, but maybe in 3 months we'll be fine. So I'm going to go ahead. That was the one big thing in here that we had all talked about, so I wanted to bring it up, and I thank my council members for giving me that leeway to discuss it. So I will go ahead and look to the lights. We have Councilmember Funk followed by Councilmember Fonzie.
Thank you. And I want to build on the mayor's question here for a second just to make sure that I really understand this, and that it's clear for all of us, that the concern we have in the Del Rio area is that we've got, first of all, some properties that are outside of the specific plan and not governed by it, but which might be suitable for high traffic uses, and in fact some of which have been proposed, and that we have, but that the overall way that that area is developing and that retailing is developing is telling us that we're not going to generate, with the large properties, we're not going to generate the level of traffic that would require those very costly roundabouts, costly in terms of the dollars invested in them and costly in terms of the land that they occupy and prevent from other uses. So is that all of that correct so far?
Yes.
Okay, so if I understand then the conversation that you just, discussion you just had with the mayor, with this policy right now, the mayor has articulated a vulnerability that someone could come in and press for a use that would push the overall traffic volume to a point where we were going to have those roundabouts that otherwise we think we can avoid. That by pushing additional high volume usages in that area, and the mayor is concerned that we might not be well enough protected, but you're telling us that we're expecting within the next couple of months or so to have an opportunity to review and revise that Del Rio specific plan, so that once we do that, then we wouldn't be planning for those roundabouts anymore. And it would be much more difficult for an aggressive developer to try to push the envelope, if you will, to press to get that very high volume usage approved.
Yes, that's accurate. But at the same time, we still, as our attorney mentioned, we still have the use permit, and we still have the findings we have to make. And even the bigger thing, we still have, if we adopt this policy, the alternative trip methodology for charging traffic impact fees, which is pretty substantial because in our calculations, it becomes pretty costly to even do a mid-sized fast food restaurant compared to doing something that is much larger and perhaps much more significant revenue production for a developer. So it's quite a disincentive.
Okay. So if is the point of impact is going to be on usages that have already been built or usages that have already been approved or usages that have already been proposed or where someone might own land that they might be thinking about that? Where's the...
So that line would be drawn after tonight. If we adopt this policy, any new project that comes in for either a conditional use permit or a construction permit after today's date would be subject to that alternative trip methodology for these high-intensive uses. Now, there are several that are already in the door that have already been given approval. They've already been given conditional use permits. We cannot really put this onto them retroactively. Well, we could, but I think that could be challenged. I don't think that's appropriate. So, for example, there is a Taco Bell that's been approved. There is an additional fuel station that's been approved up there, the pit stop. And those things are already given their discretionary approval. They're already, you know, in a construction permit review process. They've already been given estimates in terms of what their impact fees would be. It would be disingenuous at this point to change that. But new projects that come in that haven't been contemplated, certainly.
Okay. And intent is that the concern is about additional business. It's not that every drive-through is bad. It's that we've got enough of them that additional ones push us over the edge in terms of traffic volume in these areas, and also are tending to push us towards a balance of retailing and restaurant experience that is not where we want to go as a community. We're getting off track. So if the concern is that it's the additional businesses would you be amenable to amending the whereas clause at the very top of page 51 in the packets that begins whereas drive-through?
I think this should wait for deliberation.
Okay.
So if you could put that to the side and let's just wait with questions right now of staff.
Okay, we have traditionally asked if staff is comfortable with a potential amendment.
Well, typically it's those of us that need to, but
okay,
if you'd like, go.
I can defer that if that's...
If you're wondering if it's possible, go ahead and ask then.
Sure. If it's possible or if it would it create any difficulties to insert the word additional into that whereas clause so that we're talking about whereas additional drive-through businesses, fuel stations, et cetera, are considered contrary to the orderly development and are incompatible with future quarter goals, et cetera.
I don't believe that would have any impact to what the intent of this policy is, but I'll leave that up to the pleasure of the council to decide whether this language change is necessary.
Okay. So, and if in the scenario that we were discussing with the mayor, where between now and when we get the Del Rio specific plan changed, if a developer came in with and wants to put another restaurant right next to the Taco Bell or whatever that's proposed, that the protection would be that the conditional use permit would have to be approved by our planning commission, and it can be appealed to this body, as we've seen before, and we would then be accountable to ourselves for enforcing our policy. Is that the protection level of protection?
That is accurate. But also, this policy is something that you're giving to staff, and that the message is that when an anticipated development comes in, that we share the policy with them and share the potential impact fees with them, and it essentially is the message that's sent to that sort of land use under this scenario.
Okay. And I have a second very minor amendment, but we can we'll discuss that in deliberations that doesn't require a question. Thank you.
Councilmember Fonzie, followed by Mayor Pro Tem Borbo.
Thank you. I have some concerns, as shared by the mayor, regarding the timing on this. I know that you're saying we'll get it in March, but there seems to be a rush to get to the door, that when we reach a certain level, particularly the Del Rio area, then it triggers the roundabout or other traffic improvement. So it's kind of a rush to get there first before it's required. And when you hit that threshold, that's the guy that you say, gotcha. And so I'm wondering, is there some way that you see that we could deal with that so that we put the brakes on and they understand that we're not going to go there before they spend the money and do the plans and go forward?
That's truly the intent of this policy. So if we feel that it doesn't say what it's intended to say, I think then we need to potentially amend this language to more directly speak the voice of where you're trying to go with it. So in staff's opinion, we believe this policy does that job, and especially in concert with the alternative fee methodology.
Okay, good. We're going to hold you to that one then. And the other thing that is a little bit concerning, I believe, is I think we had given direction to staff that we wanted to look particularly at the San Anselmo Del Rio intersections, but I think this alternative cost per single trip method would apply citywide. So let's say a drive-through came to Morro Road, which might be an appropriate place that doesn't have the traffic issues mid-block. Will they be involved in paying this fee as well, or is it primarily a geographical specific area?
That is the intent, and that is at the council's pleasure. Again, you can change that. Might be something to think about if we do create an area where you don't have that fee. It might be, you know, the honey that the bees want to fly to. So we have to be careful, but certainly you can choose what you want to do. I think we're saying citywide so that we don't create a magnet area where you're trying to draw drive-throughs into, unless there is that area that you want to create that draw.
Well, I'm not sure that we know that until we work on the general plan, so it's almost premature to do this, but yet we need to do something because we're getting places like Habit Burger, which we want, and we need and have a sit-down restaurant, but yet they tell us, well, we'll come, but we won't come if we don't have a drive-through.
That's possible.
And I can see the incentive, 1,500 meals per day through that drive-through versus, what was it, 158 if you have a sit-down. Why would you build a sit-down restaurant, which is what I hear from my constituents that they really want?
Yeah. And so the other thing to look at is, you know, where are we having our traffic impacts? We really are having our traffic impacts along the 101 corridor because of the fact that our overpasses were built to a different era, a different, you know, a different level of service. And now that as traffic volumes come up, all these overpasses, eight of them, are becoming problematic. And so that's really the focus. That's really the future cost. That's really where our impact fees try to analyze the issue. So it's potential that some other location in the city, Morro Road being that example, may not be subject to the same significant traffic impact fees.
So if we were to restrict it to the Del Rio San Anselmo intersection, or I'm not even sure how to define it, Del Rio specific.
Well, we have the
area,
map. We do have the map that's here with this particular policy.
Not applying it to other areas in town, correct?
Again, it's at the council's pleasure if they want to do it that way, or if they want to do some other methodology by
probably we need to discuss it.
Areas.
Yes,
yes, yeah, that's something you need to discuss.
Right. Okay.
If I could just give a little bit of just history too, because I want to make sure that we all understand when we adopted the development impact fees. And when we went through the whole process determining nexus, we spent a lot of time making sure that each business pays their fair share of the total traffic here in town. This alternative method was always intended to be applied to those high-volume users. For example, a typical commercial business has 41 daily trips per 1,000 square foot. A typical coffee shop has 830 trips per square foot, per 1,000 square foot. So this method was always intended to apply to those no matter where they were in the city because they were adding a lot more trips to the whole circulation system. They're causing more quicker need to widen bridges, a quicker need to change intersections, all of those types of things. So in essence, if you continue to say, hey, we're going to charge at the lower level, you are choosing to subsidize those businesses. And if that's what you want to do, you have the ability to do that. I just want you to know that what that means is that there's a subsidy there.
Thank you for the clarification. I just don't want to lose businesses that we want to have inadvertently by doing it the wrong way. So I want to throw it on the table at least to talk about it and see if there's consensus one way or the other. I don't have a clue which would be the best at this point till I have more information. I was wondering if you could refresh my memory about the Del Rio specific plan. As I recall, way back at Walmart days, we talked about the intersection at San Anselmo having some impact if you were going down to the proposed Walmart. But I don't recall whether it was zoned differently or there were other conditions that we need to remember before we include that area.
There is road improvements that have to happen down that end. There is a traffic signal that needs to go in down that end. I could probably have our Public Works Director remind us and clarify where that signal went. I thought it was at the, well, maybe he could weigh in on that. But I know there was some traffic improvements that were scheduled down there with Walmart and with the EIR.
Right. Yeah, one of the off-site improvements that was mitigated on Walmart was to put a new traffic signal at San Anselmo East, as I call it, at the Kmart entrance. Mm-hmm. So right next there where the old 777 auto sales intersection is right there. So
Nick, in your opinion, if we have big changes after Kmart is gone and to that plaza, how will that kick in with the Del Rio specific plan since everything's changed?
Yeah, it's we're going any development that's proposed there is going to have a traffic study done so we can see those impacts. I think most people that go through San Anselmo in the afternoon understand that's not in great shape either, and that eventually, you can imagine if the Kmart Center got redeveloped or you had a new building go on in the corner there, that's going to have some impact on that interchange. So we'll need to look at that. The development impact study that staff and its consultant has been working on has identified some of these improvements that are going to be needed. And as Director Dunsmore mentioned before, really the high users, you're adding a lot of traffic with convenience stores and drive-through fast food restaurants and gas stations and these things. So much higher than a shopping center actually would have.
Yeah, I know that we've had several proposals to bring drive-through restaurants or filling stations to the San Anselmo El Camino corner, but because of the traffic improvements required, they went away. Would this alternative trip change that equation at all, or would they still be required to do those improvements?
Yeah, I think right now with the specific plan, until that has changed, the Walmart development is still, if they sold that project to somebody else and they decided to pursue the project, like whatever it might be, would still be conditioned to build the roundabout at El Camino and Del Rio and do those off-site improvements, including the traffic signal at San Anselmo East. So that's one thing that the council and staff have been trying to get to is getting this some of the development up on Del Rio sprung free with some of the developers that are ready to move. But being careful about reserving a plan line or a setback so buildings aren't built in future right of way that might be needed for a roundabout or some other type of alternative interim improvements or future improvements.
Great. Yeah, we only get one chance to do it right, so we've got to be careful.
And my recommendation would be to, not take that for granted because, it's one thing if you have to, get some parking stalls and buy some of those through condemnation or right-of-way acquisition. It's another thing if there's a building part of that and that becomes much more costly to obtain.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Borbo, followed by Councilmember Newsom.
All right, thank you. I kind of have the same question as Councilmember Fonzie, but I want to make sure I've got this. As I read this, you know, we're talking about Del Rio area, Del Rio to San Anselmo, which is what our discussion in September ended up centering on, because it is in that area that, you know, if we let some high traffic producing thing occur, it affects the potential for other businesses to build because it could trigger the requirement for improvements. But as written, the policy applies citywide. What you've provided here applies citywide, correct?
The policy is intended to only apply to that mapped area. The
okay.
Alternative cost per single trip method is already something in our impact fee schedule that we have the ability to use anywhere in the city. Separately, we're saying we should be using that for these uses as well.
Well,
looking at this policy, so that it's two different things.
Maybe that's what confused me, because this is an existing method that we've not used for whatever reason. And I guess this has been an existing method on the books since 2002, if I understand from
yes.
my earlier discussion with the city manager. Okay, because I just didn't read it correctly in here, that we're only applying this policy to this specific area. Well, I guess on the map it indicates that. Because, I mean, I'm not, you know, we have some conversation about drive-thrus versus more desirable things, and I'm not opposed to drive-through restaurants if that's what businesses want, but I am, you know, I'm very concerned about affecting other businesses' ability to do stuff. My concern is on this. I was very shocked to read. We got an email at 4 o'clock because I think myself, and I think prior to me, another council member asked what the difference would be in fees between the method we've been using and this alternative method, and I was kind of shocked. I knew it would be substantially more using this method, but it indicates that a 2,000 square foot structure, commercial structure, under a generic method would have a fee of $18,000 something, 18 something, but a 2,000 square foot coffee shop could have a fee of $371,000. So, you know, not twice as much or three times or even 10 times as much as I was forewarned it could be. We're talking 30 times the, you know, the fee for a generic thing. And then your presentation, if you could go back to some of the slide number, some of the trip numbers for the different types of uses, I'm kind of astounded by some of these numbers because I'm sitting here thinking in my head how many hours there are in a day and how many people can go through a drive-through. And I'm wondering, where do these numbers come from? I assume there was some sort of a traffic study, or is this some generic industry, considered an industry average or something? Because these numbers are absolutely astounding, and frankly, I'm a little incredulous at them.
They come from what we call the ITE manual, Institute of Traffic Engineers.
Okay.
It's the Public Works Directors Club.
Nick can answer this.
But no, more seriously, it's a nationally recognized manual that we all rely on for estimating trips. Their averages, some of these actually are a lot higher. I mean, certain brands of restaurants that we have in town are much higher than other brands, even though they're the same size. So they have to get an average. But what we have found in doing our own analysis, they're pretty darn close. It's pretty interesting. It's astounding the number of trips that you can get through when you're just consistently feeding people through at some of these fast food restaurants. It's, you know, one about every 30 seconds. And
they just go to a different one than I do, so just get a better service than when I go.
Well, some of them are that way. Some of the other ones are slower. But then you look at a gas station that can have actually as many as 12 pumps. And that's that one at the bottom. That 2,400 is based on a 12-pump station where there's six of these pumps, and there's one pump on each side, and there's 12 of them. You can be serving 12 vehicles at one time. Now, it may not be like that all day, but then the average you can get that many trips, especially when there's a convenience store or restaurant attached to that fuel station, and you're in a high volume area at a heavy demand corner, you know, where that's, you know, for example, like the Arco station.
I'm glad you mentioned 12 pumps, because I got gas today, and I was thinking there's four pumps. It certainly took me more than 4 minutes, so more than a minute per car, and you couldn't get, you know, 2,400 through there if you were busy 24 hours a day.
There's a couple smaller stations where there's four pumps, and there's some of them that are six pumps, but there's some that are 12.
Yeah. Okay. On the next slide, I think it was, you showed the average house having divide that by 100, 9.44 trips a day. Now, is a trip coming and going then? Is that two trips?
So coming and going is actually two trips. So if I drive to work, that's one. If I drive back home, that's two.
Okay. So nine and a half, or call it 10 trips a day, is really five times.
You know, a typical house has two and a half people living in it, two vehicles, and one person drives to work and back home again. The other person drives to the store and drops off the kids. And it's an average. Again, some have a lot higher, some have a lot lower. Sometimes you don't leave the house for 2 days at a time.
And so for these businesses, that's two trips. I mean, if I decide to go out in the morning and go to Starbucks and come back, that's two trips.
It is. So that's a little bit deceiving. Exactly. That's two trips.
Okay.
Trips for the house and the business?
Well,
no, that would only be one trip for the business. If you're visiting that business,
okay, so it's not
away,
like a coming and a going from the business, like
I
you.
I think that's how it is. Nick?
It's not four trips, is it? Because it's two trips for my house and two trips for the business.
I clarify it while we're right here. So it's two trips for the house, but only one for the business.
Yes, they call trip in. There's lots of data.
I could go to Starbucks and not go back home. I could go to work.
And so then that is counted. So you discount and change based on what you're going to go visit. They're called diverted trips, right? So if I go pick up my kids and go to the grocery store, that may be a diverted trip, which is not as long as a trip in. So there's some discounted percentages for each one. So a trip to a Starbucks may more often be a passerby or diverted trip than maybe a trip to, a school or something.
Sure. The reason I don't want to get, you know, into excruciating detail on that, but I was kind of incredulous at some of these numbers as what could be purported to occur at one of these businesses. But also, I'm then astounded by this fee differential, because as a matter of policy, I don't know that we, and I'm not sure how we came up with the multiplier, if you will, here. You have so many trips per a coffee shop or something or some other use, then I'm not sure how we came up with the multiplier in terms of how many dollars, you know, to charge them.
So that is in your development fee nexus report. So it's the same way you came up with the dollars for all of your development fees. So you look at your circulation element or your circulation portion of your nexus report for your development impact fee, and that comes up with a dollar per trip. For circulation, it happens to be how much our citizens have invested in our infrastructure, because that's lower than how much we need for future infrastructure. It comes up with that $162 per daily mile. And then there's a calculation in there for that. So this is the same formula that we come up for each of those categories. The only difference is if it's just in those categories, they're using averages, not what that specific business produces. What they do is they look at what your total infrastructure needs are. And they're going to assume so many fast foods, and they're going to assume so many fast foods at this higher dollar amount. They're going to assume so many drive-throughs. They're going to do all that. And then they take all of those trips, take our future needs divided by all those trips to come up with the dollar cost per. So,
right, because the purpose of these fees is to gather money for improvements due to increased traffic.
Correct.
It's not for road maintenance or anything like that.
No, right? Only be used for improvements. We have basically 9 on-ramps, off-ramps, interchanges here in town. Almost every single one is a pinch point along El Camino. So there's a lot of improvements that we need to make traffic flowing freely on all of those intersections.
Right. I guess my concern, and it relates to this, is that, you know, if we were to say, gee, we should have charged, for example, the Taco Bell drive-through that recently was approved, we should have charged them $371,000, but in effect, we probably charged them, you know, $20,000,
$25,000. That is correct.
And, but that means, that is to say then that other places around, we perhaps should have been charging them this, what seems like an extremely large amount of money to me. So, in talking
about... And remember that 100,000 square foot of office space, mm-hmm, pays $87,000.
Right.
For fewer trips than that Taco Bell.
Right. No, I understand the concept. So, in relation to this and us adopting this policy, you've mentioned that in 90 days or so, you hope to come back with an update on the specific plan. And some of the council members, I think, kind of asked this. Sort of ask the same question, but I want to understand better if, because 90 days doesn't sound very long in government time, if someone were to come along in the next 90 days before we readdress this, let's say someone, you know, there's a new owner of the Kmart Center and they finally come along and say, I want to build a drive-through restaurant at the empty corner there. It sounds like for Mr. DeBar, we would have to do a whole traffic study anyway. Is that what you indicated?
Yes.
One hasn't been done there in a while? Or?
Correct. We'd want an updated one. There has been some traffic studies done there in the vicinity, but with something like that, we'd want to have that freshened up and use the most current traffic counts and the projections.
So, for example, because I was thinking of the example that if somebody came along and wanted to do that, and they went through the process, did it, and then all of a sudden the new owner wants to redo the Kmart Center, and we go, hey, bummer for you, we just approved this use, and, you know, it's going to cause a bunch of vehicle trips, and now whatever you want to do is going to require an improvement to the overpass, which would effectively kill any new idea at the Kmart Center if it triggered improvements like that, right?
It could.
So, but, I mean, because we would require a traffic study, that's not a real danger, that somebody's going to come along and say, I want to build something at that corner.
No, they'd have to go through, you know, their due diligence to make sure that they're not going to have, on a, you know, these impacts to the system. We make sure that they pay their fair share, I guess, to that.
So as a practical matter, Mr. Dunsmore, if on this area we're talking about, you know, which goes from San Anselmo to Del Rio, what is the real risk of something happening between now, you know, somebody proposing something between now and February or March when you come back to us with an update on the specific plan, coming along and proposing something that would then entitle them in some way to proceed prior to us adopting an amendment to the specific plan? Because I'm trying to visualize where between that corner of San Anselmo and Del Rio, where's the risk here in terms of something happening?
Absent this policy, there's definitely a risk.
Okay.
We have seen four or such businesses just in the last 4 months. Two of those fuel stations and two of those drive-through restaurants. And so it's very possible that at the rate development is occurring right now and the rate things are happening, it's very possible that could happen. So I think the policy addresses it. I think it begins to address those concerns.
Okay. That's what I wanted to make sure I understood what the real risk level is. So you're telling me you perceive there is a substantial risk. You say there's been, in addition to the gas station and the drive-through Taco Bell approved, there's been some other proposals come along.
There's a new ARCO proposed on the south end of town. The design review committee looked at it. Didn't require a use permit, so it's coming in with a construction permit. It's already in process. There's also a drive-through coffee shop on the south end of town.
But those are not in this area. And would those examples you just gave, I gather from what we just discussed previously, those two examples would not be subject to this alternative method? Because you said that we're only applying this to this specific area?
No. The idea is that we staff's proposal is we apply the alternative trip method to any such traffic-intensive use in the entire city. Okay, but we apply this particular policy and the findings and the other factors in this policy specifically to that mapped area.
Okay, that goes back to why I was confused, because I thought you were proposing to apply the alternative trip method citywide.
We are. So we probably should have made this a little clearer. So in this policy language, in number one, that should be citywide for number one.
Yeah.
In number two and three, that applies to Exhibit A. And it says it in here, Exhibit A in numbers two and three. It doesn't say Exhibit A in number one, but I think adding the word citywide in number one would clarify that issue. That's our intent as staff.
Okay, thank you for that clarification. Now, does, because of the magnitude of that change, it does, I don't know, it's something I'm a little reluctant to say, yeah, let's you know, raise our fees by, you know, a factor of 30 for this particular area.
Are you having questions?
Yes, but I was just kind of looking whether or not there were, is that something we would, as we get down in February, we talk about the specific plan area. I don't know if that's something we would, could we readdress this fee level at that, at some point in time as well, is the question. So it seems like an extremely high fee level.
It is, but again, it comes back to where the origin of this policy discussion came from, the fact that we have over 16 fuel stations and over 16 fast food drive-thru restaurants in a city of 30,000 because of our proximity to Highway 101, and it's tearing away at our ability to provide other quality business based on our ability to, mm-hmm. to do the traffic impacts, to address the traffic impacts. That's really what this is all about. And so we can certainly model this any way we like to incentivize or disincentivize the type of development we want in our community.
All right. Thank you.
And
Councilmember Newsom. So I want to talk about the alternative cost per single trip method. Those impact fees go into one specific account for all improvements throughout the entire city?
They go into one specific circulation impact fee account. So all the circulation impact fees, because you couldn't keep them in a specific account for each improvement, you would never get any. You'd have to wait 70 years to get enough money to do anything. By then, you'd have gridlock. So they can only be used on projects that were in the development impact fee report that we said we needed to handle the traffic envisioned by our general plan for future development. Those projects are listed specifically. Now, the money, if a new Starbucks went in down at Kerberl, that money could be used on Del Rio. Or if the money went in Del Rio, it could be used at Kerberl. But eventually, in theory, if you apply all these as we need things, they would, all the projects would get done if you collected all of the fees.
So I'm looking back over. I'm worried about the timing and what's going to come in. What's currently gone into Del Rio already has been a fuel station's been approved, a drive-thru has been approved, and a convenience store has been approved. On the existing Del Rio detail, it says 40%, 47% of the traffic would be generated by other future development outside of Walmart and the annexation project, or the annex project. Where is the 47% going to come of the $15 million?
So there is some existing use already that the general, that we as the citizens have to pay for that. The other thing is the Taco Bell that we're talking about is not in the Del Rio specific plan. Emerald Ridge is not in the Del Rio specific plan. Potential Barrel Creek is not in the Del Rio specific plan. All of those developments, anywhere pretty much from Home Depot to San Anselmo, are going to contribute to traffic at that intersection. As they build, they're going to pay development impact fees.
Will we get to the full $15 million? I don't know, from those. But that's why we're looking at our development impact fees as a whole. And that might be a good time, too, to look at the relook at the policy on whether you want to charge alternative use or if you want to say no, we'll let general taxpayers subsidize those trips because it's worth it to have that particular use.
So evaluating the Del Rio specific plan or possibly amending it in 3 months isn't going to have any effect on these areas, including the Barrel Creek project that's potentially going in the lodging. So the largest consumers of this interchange are not even addressed in the Del Rio specific plan and are making long-term impacts to an area that we don't even have money to pay for, and it's going to trigger around about maybe 10 years. So that gives us 10 years to save up from 47% of the other incoming businesses. How do we see if we charge alternative costs per single trip, are we going to be able to at least come up with a portion and set aside?
We will be able to come up with a portion. We will not be able to come up with the whole thing. And here's the reason why. When we last did our development impact fee in 2006, we thought fixing the Del Rio interchange in El Camino at that time was a $4.5 million project. With changes in Caltrans, changes in traffic, changes in a lot of things, we now know that's a $15 million. So our fees are set as high as they are and as scary as they are, they're still based on 2006 prices. And we have been collecting since 2006 at 2006 prices, but things have been going up. So we know inherently that we're going to have a shortfall, even if we collect the full fees.
Okay, and then just one other clarification. When we talk about the new projects after today, if we enact this ordinance or policy, anybody that has already come into design review that's already submitted and started working with the city is excluded from these additional impact fees?
Anyone that has received what we'll call entitlement, which means they've received either a conditional use permit or they have submitted for a construction permit, would be exempt because they're already in the system. Now, someone who's just, hey, coming in to talk to the city about something, or they submit a concept and it hasn't gone anywhere, that wouldn't really count. They would have to actually submit an application, such as a construction permit, or been granted that approval for that conditional use permit in advance of their construction permit.
Okay, thank you for the clarification.
Councilmember Funk, followed by Councilmember Fonzie.
Okay, so just to clarify, I guess this goes to the city manager. So there, we have an additional opportunity to weigh in on this, right? We've got a report that will be coming up at some point to study all of our impact fees and update that from the 2006 study.
We are working on that right now. I am hoping to have it to you sometime in the February to March time frame. We have a draft of it. We are proofing it. It's very thick, a lot of technical information we want to make sure is correct. So that will take a few months, but we're hoping February, March.
Okay. So at that point, would the council have the liberty to say if this the $360,000 level, in effect, of fees for a very active coffee shop drive-thru, if that seems too much for us, we would have the opportunity to set that at some lower amount or adjust that according to a set of priorities for the city?
Absolutely. You have that ability. You have in the past where you said in the downtown we want to have a lower impact fee. So there are opportunities at that time. Once you see the costs and the ramifications, that doesn't change. But saying, you know what, this is worth it to us to get that, to have, to look for other funding to get those projects done, because we know that we're not going to collect it from them. Yes.
Okay, so the council could then decide based on the trade-offs between, say, high-paying jobs and versus high-traffic businesses, that we could make a decision about what those fees should be.
Absolutely.
Okay, so what we're looking at now is a policy that would be in effect, go into effect immediately, but that we have the opportunity to revisit in a few months and adjust that level a little bit should we decide that this is, that other businesses should subsidize this kind of activity.
That is correct.
That'll be me.
Councilmember Fonzie.
Thank you. I'm not sure if you could answer this one, Rochelle, or this would be Phil, but as a hypothetical, let's say an Olive Garden or Cracker Barrel or Outback Steakhouse was looking to put a business in San Luis Obispo County, and they hadn't decided on a spot. If we were to adopt this, what are the neighboring cities' fees like in comparison to ours? Would it, you know, make them run because they're so high, or really we're in the average with this alternative cost per single trip method?
First, I would say that this is not intended to apply to an Outback or an Olive Garden. This is only for drive-through business applications, including fuel stations, car washes. Well, I guess it does say restaurants. I think the intent was...
Let's just say a Habit Burger type with...
Okay, a Habit Burger type of restaurant. I believe, and this is a guess, so don't take me to the bank, but it is my understanding that most cities have a similar alternative fee calculation for fuel stations and drive-through restaurants. I can double-check. I don't have that information for you right now.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Boy, I'm feeling a little like I'm missing some things here. City Manager, you just said this, and I'm just reading this here in the first paragraph. So are we saying we're only going to apply the alternative cost per single trip method to drive-through business applications? So we wouldn't, apply it to
drive-through car washes, right. Office parks already have a flat fee.
Understand.
Yeah.
I mean, you did provide an example of how calculated both ways what that would do
right
for a larger office park. But so... In effect, to go back to Councilmember Fondi's original point, if we were looking at slowing down drive-throughs, we're only applying this to drive-throughs. So it's a discouragement for right. drive-throughs versus other types of businesses.
That is correct.
So to go to Councilmember Funk's question about, we can make policy decisions, as you indicated, to not charge certain fees in the downtown area. We can also, when we readdress impact fees, we could also then, we have certain kinds, I'll call them more desirable businesses because of what they bring to the town or maybe revenue producing, so they're offsetting, they're providing other sources of revenue to maybe pay for things. By policy, we could then say, hey, for this type of business, we're going to charge a lesser fee.
That is my understanding. We would have to be make sure that how we do that is very legal, but there are abilities to do that.
Right. You can make a – okay. That's what I was getting at. And then to Council Member Newsom's point, I believe when she first asked the question getting at, you collect the money from a project down the south end of town, you can spend it on the project up here because they're all listed in our as projects under our under this particular fee. But do we – don't we charge a special additional fee down at Santa Barbara Road for, for projects down in that area?
Yes, and there's one at Santa Rosa as well, too, that reimburses the Santa Rosa signal modifications that were done some years ago.
So not for Santa Rosa widening or something like that, though?
I think it was for the signals that were put in there by the hotel project.
And so we don't charge a similar... additional fee, if you will, for businesses that would affect San Anselmo or businesses that would affect Del Rio?
Those don't have current reimbursement agreements on them, as far as I know.
And so outside the properties listed in the specific plan around Del Rio, if I put in something at Del Rio, there's no additional thing. It's just whatever
not,
fee
not,
we're
not
charging.
Currently, correct.
Okay.
I mean, it's the hope that we If we get another big project at Del Rio, such as this Barrel Creek was being contemplated, that we would adjust the boundaries of the specific plan at that time. We can include other properties and set up a whole fee area to support future infrastructure. So those are other options we can do in the future.
Right, because, I mean, you know, it's water under the bridge. I'm not sure why this specific plan was, you know, limited as it was and not to include both sides of the freeway, et cetera.
Yeah, it is unusual.
But would it be then also logical at some point in time for us to say, you know, let's look at San Anselmo, let's look at Del Rio, because basically every interchange in town, not interchange, but every overpass in town is kind of at capacity, or, you know, has constraints.
It sounds like we're kind of getting way beyond our policy, so if I could kind of bring us back to dealing with the policy at hand.
I do think it's important to, you know, for us to air some ideas about, you know, what we can do in the future to address whether or not we need to adopt this right now, and can we adjust? Can we make some adjustments later?
Yeah, just.
And I think the city manager has told us that we can do that.
Well, and one topic I wanted to remind us of on this policy is that every single one of these uses that we're talking about putting into this policy are uses that are subject to a conditional use permit. Gas stations now require a conditional use permit. The fast food drive-through restaurants can require a conditional use permit. The drive-through coffee shop, anything with a drive-through requires a conditional use permit. That would be the opportunity when we would evaluate it and apply this alternative fee methodology as a condition of approval, which, you know, if they weren't satisfied with that, it could be appealed to City Council and we'd have a discussion here about it. But just to let you know, it's not just automatically put on. It would be something we would use in our discretionary conditions.
You have a project come forward, goes through this process, and you're going to say, we're going to apply this to you, and you're saying they could appeal that to us?
That's a potential.
All right. Okay, thank you.
Phil, I have a question. When we look at the drive-through businesses, like you said, coffee shops could have 800 trips a day, I think is what you said, or maybe Rochelle brought that up.
800 trips per 1,000 square feet.
800 trips per 1,000 square feet. So I think it's going to be very different for a Starbucks versus, say, the little coffee shop we have on Morrow Road. Like when you talk about a chain that people know and has, you know, your Taco Bell, your Starbucks that have those. So I'm thinking, because I know we have a business owner here in the public that has indicated, you know, an interest in possibly putting in a drive-through. So I'm curious, if you look and say, you know, do you compare a 1,000-foot or 2,000-foot, whatever the 1,000-square-foot is, Taco Bell, the same as you would an independently owned business that's not a chain that wouldn't necessarily have that same number of trips? How do those trips get determined? Because I would think your small independent business owner isn't going to have the Taco Bell, Starbucks kind of trips.
That's a very good topic. But basically, it's way our traffic impact Nexus report is done. It's based on land use. Okay, let's say I have a coffee shop, and it's based on size. And there's a calculator in there. It's not based on whether that's everyone's favorite brand or not, because I'll say it. I mean, I'll say the brand name In-N-Out is very different than Burger King in terms of its volume. But they might have the same size restaurant. They might have the same size drive-through lane. So that is part of the problem. The difficulty is you can't, you know, but next year it might be that everyone's flocking to a different restaurant. It's a little bit of a challenge. You've got to try and average that out. I suppose through, you know, a discretionary action, we could treat them differently, but that's going to be really challenging because then that's going to create a little bit of equity issue.
Okay, thank you. Councilmember Funk, did you still have a question?
Okay. Yeah, I just want to follow up on this topic that the mayor raised. Are the categories within the restaurant area sufficient that we can really distinguish between a sit-down restaurant that might want to have a drive-up window for Grubhub or Uber Eats to come by and pick things up that would be an alternative to them driving up to the and getting out of the car and coming into the restaurant and coming back out. But that's a kind of use that's ancillary to a fundamentally sit-down restaurant. can we distinguish between that kind of situation and a restaurant that is fundamentally drive-through in its business model, a fast food restaurant where most of the customers are going to be going through that window drive-through, or are going to be staying a very short period of time in the restaurant? I mean, a sit-down dinner at McDonald's is going to be a different experience than, in terms of the turnover of people, than a sit-down dinner at Olive Garden or Lagana's.
Certainly you can have that differentiation. I think right now our code doesn't look at a business that has a drive-up sort of situation. In other words, where you go up when you park in a kind of a parking spot and you might go to a really quick window. There's a couple businesses in local towns around us that have that kind of model. It's not considered a drive-through restaurant. It doesn't have that volume. Someone goes and they actually park, for maybe 5 minutes, and they go pick something up at a window, or someone comes even to their car. It's a little different. That's a different thing. And so I think we have to look at that very carefully. But it doesn't seem to fit the same definition as a drive-through restaurant. It doesn't have that same kind of volume.
And Councilmember Funk, if I can, just the difference in the ITE rates for daily trips, sit-down restaurants for 1,000 square feet is about 112 daily trips versus a fast food, which is 471. So it's a factor of about 4 to 5 times the amount of trips. So this ITE is kind of funny. I mean, it's a technical thing. It's traffic modeling. It's kind of like, what was that one software, the SimCity or whatever? Remember that software on the computer? As you kind of built these cities, like all of a sudden you had more traffic on the roads and everything else, and that's kind of what it is. It's a little bit of social engineering, maybe a lot more social engineering than we kind of want, but it does produce a pretty accurate model overall with the various components that they have. And one other thing, if I can, Mayor Moreno, back on that Santa Rosa signal, so West Front properties did, with the Marstons and the Holiday Inn Express, that development, they did a traffic study. It was found that, hey, look, the level of service at the on and off ramps at Santa Rosa were going to fail. So they were conditioned to put in those traffic signals. And what they built those traffic signals, and then upon completion, they actually had an oversized public improvement reimbursement agreement set up that has a sunset. It's much like a sewer reimbursement agreement. It has a sunset date of 15 years, so there's a boundary, if you will, of properties that need to pay into that if they have a development that occur. But there is a sunset. They won't recoup all the 100% of those costs, obviously, because that's not going to happen in 15 years. But that's like another option if something happened at the corner of El Camino and San Anselmo, where that pad is right now, that could trigger those intersections to fail, and that could be conditioned.
All right. Thank you. All right, I'm going to go ahead and open this up for public comment. Anyone wishing to speak on this item, please come forward, state your name for the record, and you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Jeff Fosslin, 3 minutes isn't going to be enough, but we'll do what we can. First of all, this thing is confusing as confusing can be. So let's try and break it down where if we're talking basically, which we should be, from Home Depot all the way to San Anselmo and not Del Rio because it does impact everything, we should really be looking at that area. That's what the charge was, by my understanding, not citywide. Secondly to this, we still have a 20-year mess down there with a development that's occurring now, that's happened already, and that could be happening. And if a roundabout goes in, you're going to kill businesses halfway down there where the outlets, basically the old outlets in that area, because you can't come out the way the design was done and make a turn to go northbound. You actually go to San Anselmo the way it was set up. And yes, I did review the Wallace Group
plans from the Walmart thing, so I know what that looked like. We're adding a lot of housing. We're adding businesses, which is great. I think we've missed the ball on getting some in-fact fees. We're going to have some issues down there very soon with what is going to take place that could impact that traffic very soon. And I think we have to look at that. The second thing is we're saying that area or we're saying the whole city, and we don't want to turn business away from the city. We need the tax revenue, but we need to start taking a strategic view of what we're doing and how we're impacting things. And, you know, having the habit, let's pick on the habit. It's attracting business to Atascadero. It's tax revenue. Whether you like the fact that they're sitting in El Camino because they can't get through or you can't park, they're still attracting business. If you take a gas station, which some of us would differ on, and you take downtown, the one right across the street, if there was 2,400 trips to that gas station a day, could you imagine the business that would be going downtown? Because people would actually see the downtown and maybe park somewhere and go have lunch somewhere else or go visit a little store somewhere. So I think we have to look at the whole picture of this and not, you know, call that out. The next thing is we're calling drive-thrus. Drive-thrus are passe. That's 20 years ago. Now you have pickup places for things you buy online or you buy from a store. You drive, you pick them up, they throw them right in your vehicle, and away you go. The way fast food delivery is going, it's going out of technically a commissary or a food trailer, which is unbranded, and the hub places that deliver it to your houses. So we need to be looking at this a little bit more futuristic and not in the past. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. Any other member of the public wishing to speak on this item?
Mark Diaz, Tesco resident, lifelong person here. Important note on that as far as Home Depot is concerned and traffic coming from that way. That on-ramp down there, people will bypass it because you're going around, if you're heading towards San Luis Obispo, you have very limited time and you're going uphill to get onto the freeway. And I think people will avoid that, I know I do, and go all the way down and jump on the freeway through Del Rio. So any development you have from Home Depot is going to drive more traffic to that Del Rio area as a safety issue.
Thank you. Any other members of the public wishing to speak? Seeing none, we'll close public comment and bring it back to the council. I think we would certainly all agree with you that we need to look at this in a very robust and futuristic type of way, and some of us have been talking about that this evening. I think right now what we can do and need to do is move forward with something that protects us in the interim while we can be working on that in the future. Point well taken about that off-ramp or on-ramp up at Home Depot and people using Del Rio. And I think, Director, if I'm not mistaken, actually it might be our Public Works Director, that when we look at that area and the traffic impacts, that those kinds of things are taken into consideration, are they?
They are. That's what the traffic modeling does. So as one intersection or interchange gets more busy with development, that would push, you know, traffic into a different area. And that's actually the downtown enhancement project that we're working on with, you know, the road diet concepts and those other things. That's actually what a lot of the iterations we're doing is to look at, okay, if we do this, how does that impact traffic in this area? So,
But even also if there's other less used, you know, on and off ramps that people maybe don't like for certain reasons, as Mr. Diaz brought up, that they may end up going to.
They sure might. It's much like the on ramp, the northbound 101 on ramp at Rosario. A lot of people don't use that just because it's a similar configuration going uphill, very short on ramp, merging lane. And But certain times of the day, it's just fine. And other times, like at 5 o'clock, you might not want to do it. Unless you're driving a Porsche or something like that.
Yes, as we're all driving Porsches nowadays. So I think what we really need to do is focus on this policy for now, and then we can kind of have some ideas of what we think we need to be doing in the future. So I will say my concern about just saying, hey, let's keep thinking on this and revising it and doing it later, is that we don't have this protect us between now and when, particularly when we look at the specific plan. So I would like to go ahead and open this up to deliberation, and let's get a motion on the table. Councilmember Newsom. Hold on. I make a motion that we approve the staff recommendations and adopt the city or the council policy, which will limit or curtail future. Hold on. Council adopt draft resolution establishing a drive-through businesses, fuel stations, and other high-impact produces uses policy to guide development review of drive-through businesses, fuel stations, and other high-traffic producing uses applications and ensure orderly development in the city.
Do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. And would the maker of the motion and the second be okay with adding the word citywide to number one on the policy?
Yes, that in fact was the amendment that I was going to discuss with staff that the mayor asked me to defer on that might have helped us avoid some trouble. So I would suggest that in item number one, after the phrase drive-through business applications, insert citywide. And second, I would ask the maker of the motion if she would be amenable to an amendment in the first whereas clause, or in the fair whereas clause that we find at the top of page 51 that currently begins, whereas drive-through businesses, fuel stations, and other high-traffic producing uses are considered contrary to orderly development, et cetera, that we insert the word additional at the beginning of that, so it would read, whereas additional drive-through businesses, fuel stations, etc., to make it clear that that it's not a policy that says these are never appropriate. It just says that we've reached, you know, for the moment we've reached the max here, and that's enough.
The maker of the motion, okay with that?
Yes, I am.
Okay. So we have a motion by Councilmember Newsom and a second by Councilmember Funk. And I would ask, is there any deliberation that any comments that anyone would like to make before we take the vote? Mayor Pro Tem Bourbeau.
Yeah, I just want to comment. Mayor, I think you summed it up best, and that is that we need to do some interim or something to protect ourselves from future, for some things happening in the near future that would affect our ability to properly develop this corridor. But I do really want to consider this somewhat of an interim measure in a sense. I really want us in the near future to discuss the specific plan, you know, our fee structure for interchange improvements, and this fee structure. So I'm willing to, you know, support this, but I don't want to just do this and forget about it and not address those issues, you know,
absolutely,
for a long time. So, thank you.
Any other council member Fonzie?
Yeah, my comments mirror Charles Bourbeau's comments exactly, that I was thinking this would be interim only. We need more study. We need our new general plan or specific plans done so that we can customize this and make it perfect for the area. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that has been the intention from the get-go. Yes, Councilman.
Yes, and I think that what we've learned in this process is the very large extent to which we have inadvertently been subsidizing a class of businesses that are very hard on our infrastructure and not necessarily contributing, they contribute very narrowly to the city's development goals. So I think it will behoove us to put something in place for now and then revisit this issue when we look at the impact fees and put it all in context.
All right. So we have our motion by Councilmember Newsom and a second by Councilmember Funk. Roll call, please.
Councilmember Newsom?
Yes.
Councilmember Funk?
Yes.
Councilmember Fonzie?
Yes.
Mayor Pro Tem Burbeau?
Yes.
Mayor Moreno?
Yes, ma'am.
Motion passes.
Thank you. We're now on to council announcements and committee reports. We'll just combine those together, and I will go from my left to my right.
It's taken me a moment to pull myself together. I have no idea why, other than the holidays coming up, and I'm thinking about pumpkin pie. So first, I'd like to wish everybody a happy Thanksgiving, and I hope everyone has safe travels and enjoys their family time. The only meeting I had was back on November 13th. Design Review Committee approved the remodeling or the expansion of our vet clinic down on El Camino, and that's all we have so far. So welcome to December.
I would just mention Councilmember Fonzie and I are on a kind of ad hoc committee regarding issues related to the request that we had for mobile home rent stabilization ordinance, and we're trying to put together a couple of meetings next week with residents first, and then a meeting with park owners and park owner representatives second. So we're trying to get that on the calendar for next week, and can hopefully report something back at our next meeting. So, and I also would want to say, though, this evening was just really heartening. And, you know, I already know this and you all know it, but what a great community we live in with the volunteer spirit. And when people need something or ask for something, others are ready to jump in and help and provide their knowledge and everything. And it just always reiterates to me why I love living here and love living in a small city.
Well said.
That's what I'm thankful for.
Yes. I think we all are. And a very happy Thanksgiving to all of you. I was at the Economic Vitality Corporation last week, and at that meeting we had an update on a lot of the new legislation in California that's passed, particularly the effects on business, and it was, I think it's overboard to say it's a bit frightening. The following day, we have a North County EVC group that gets together, and both of the chamber presidents were there. We're making sure they have that material because we think it's very important for them to get out to their members, because I think a lot of small businesses are not going to, I mean, they're just getting business done, and they're not necessarily going to know all of these laws that are passing that can affect them and be quite expensive. And then also with the North County EVC, we are helping to pull together. We are not doing it ourselves, but we're helping to facilitate a CEO roundtable in the North County. So looking forward to that coming about.
Thank you. I attended an air pollution control district meeting, and 49 acres were taken out of the Oceano State Park driving area and will be planted into some kind of ground cover. The Air Pollution Control District is very interesting because its primary purpose is to protect the air quality and the health, but then you hold up the other side, and it's the economic impacts that we have to consider as well when businesses are affected by fewer people attending and going to the park. So I'll keep you posted on where that's going. Very controversial, obviously. And went to a LAFCO meeting this last week. The Atascadero Sphere of Influence that we heard about a couple weeks ago was approved as suggested, with the wording suggested by our mayor that the should was changed to shall, which is very important from our perspective, so we can get some extra money and negotiating power when we annex, or if we annex, Eagle Ranch. And one other point was brought up that I had not heard about, and we'll keep you posted on, but Santa Margarita is governed by a county service area that provides their water service right now. There's a move afoot to consider a possible mutual water company or some other kind of district, and the thought was that perhaps it would be a Atascadero Mutual Water Company that would extend its services. This is just very preliminary, but this could have an effect on our city as well, although it's not part of our city services. We all live here and use that company. Thank you.
The Homeless Services Oversight Council will be discussing nominations on December 4th for a number of roles on that committee that are up for where positions currently are being expiring. That'll be a conference call on the 4th, and then the group as a whole will be meeting later in December after our next meeting. I don't see anything controversial there. And while we're on our gratitude lists, I would say it was a great honor and a delicious honor to get to represent this body as a taco judge for Taco Day on Traffic Way. And I appreciate so many of you coming out to join in those festivities. It's really like a block party for the whole town. And the fact that we can have events like this that allow us to gather together, to be the we that Don Clickard was talking about, and to build our bonds as a community in so many fun and energetic and delicious ways across generations, across races and ethnicities and cultures and backgrounds, is something that I really treasure about living in and serving this community. So thank you.
Thank you. All right, now we are on to our individual determinations, and we have one, and that is appointment of a new representative to our design review committee. So, and this is under the city clerk, but I'm assuming I can take the lead on that. All right. So a few weeks ago, I did get an email from Jamie Kirk, who has been on our design review committee since its inception. Sorry, Jamie Jones. I still can't get and it's such a good alliteration, Jamie Jones. Since its inception, basically the council back in 2010 formed the DRC, so it probably got going sometime in 2011, 2012. And Jamie has been the at-large member since then, a very valuable member. And she is stepping back, and so I went on a search and found Emily Baranek. So very excited to introduce her to you. And so I would invite you, Emily, to come up and introduce yourself and say a few words.
Good evening, Mayor Moreno. Thank you, Council staff.
We need to get the microphone on. Or do you just need to pull it closer?
I just need
there
to
you
closer.
Go.
Thank you, Mayor Moreno, staff, and council members for having me. I'm really excited about the appointment. I missed Emily Baranek, Tascadero, lifelong resident, fourth generation. I've been in planning, design, and construction for almost 20 years. Have lived here my whole life and really watched the progress that this town has made recently, and I'm really excited to get to use some of that experience to help keep up that momentum. Really honored and super excited. So thank you so much.
Well, welcome. We look forward to seeing more of you.
Thank you.
And so I would just ask, we don't need a vote, but I would just ask, do we have consensus to appoint Ms. Baranek?
Yes.
All right. Excellent. Thank you. So welcome aboard. And any other individual determinations? All right. With that, happy Thanksgiving.
Thank you.